Honorable members, I'm looking now just finishing off a call with the minister. I see that from the team of the minister, there's also a DG team. May I welcome the leadership from the Department of Health and really indicate to you, honorable members, that I've just heard a call from the minister. He says he's going to be 15 minutes late because of the road he's traveling at. He's not able, he's trying to log in there. He's actually finding it. It is a challenging spot. And he hopes to get to a right spot around 15 minutes time. So I then, we arranged then that because the presentation has been with us, in fact, I was going to request that the presentation is not done in a very long process. Maybe when the minister logs in 15, 20 minutes time, would have just finished with the presentation and start with the questions. So I said, if the presentation is finished in 15, 20 minutes time, which I hope the members will do, because it's about 30 slides, we then give him a slot to do his opening remarks. Then we start with the questions. I've requested, honorable members, if we can, I hope you'll support me, that we are the Portfolio Committee on Health, and if the president touches on issues of health, we might wish to hear that. So I have made a plea. I have not checked whether your response was the yes or no to round up our meeting at 5:27. But welcome to the leadership of the Department of Health, led by Dr. Buthelezi, the DG, the CFO, Dr. Aquina, also PLO, and many other members I have not noticed. Ms. Machalamba, if you can then maybe fly to the agenda for us. I will not go through the item of who is here. I've seen all our members. We are all present. And I've also, yes, we are now on item number 6. Confirmation, yeah. But maybe we start at 5, Dr. Telezi. You can greet and indicate who is here and who will lead the presentation. We will interject when the minister comes in, but I hope we'll not. You will immediately would have just about to wrap up in 20 minutes time when he has indicated he might be in the right spot to log into the meeting. Meanwhile, I thought honorable members will support me to say, let us go on so long. One of the officials will present to us after Dr. Buthelezi has confirmed who is attending this meeting with him. Dr. Buthelezi.
Good afternoon, honorable chair, honorable members and colleagues. With me today is Dr. Aquina Thulare, who is going to lead us in the presentation. Then we've got the Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Van der Merwe. Then we've got our PLO, Mr. Johannes Khatla. And then we've got Mr. Mateza, who is the Chief of Staff in the Office of the Minister. And with your indulgence, Chair, we will allow the minister when he comes to do the opening remarks. But for now, we request through you, Honorable Chair, that Dr. Thulare will lead us through the presentation, and she will actually summarize it because it was circulated yesterday. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. Dr. Thulare, my members have already indicated they want to engage. I already have got a list that I've circulated. Thank you for sending us the presentation yesterday. So don't go through the presentation as if you are presenting for the first time. We have read it too. Just highlight the important. Spend half a minute on the slide. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I'm going to do exactly as I am instructed, Honorable Chair. And if I may, I'm going to switch off my video because my network is not very stable, if it's acceptable, Honorable Chair.
Acceptable.
Can we see the slides?
Yeah,
thank you. So we are briefly going to touch on a question that has been raised over and over again, the criteria that is used when we select vaccines, and we'll provide an update on the vaccine pipeline and where we are with some of the vaccines. We will also provide an update on the Sisonke program, and then update the portfolio committee on planning and returning to phase 1B, which is the next phase after Sisonke, and also phase 2 implementation. And then we'll just end up with just an update on the discussions that have taken place and how we plan to approach South African diplomats who are stationed outside of the country and diplomatic missions and other organizations, international organizations that are based here in South Africa. Just to refresh our memories once again that the certain criteria that we have taken into account when we select vaccines, advised by the Ministerial Advisory on Vaccination, the issue of safety, efficacy, and immunogenicity, ease of use and the scheduling, single dose versus multi-dose, stability during storage and distribution, supply and sustainability by the manufacturers, the cost of the vaccine, and approvals by SAHPRA. We want to refresh the portfolio committee that based on the advice that we have received from the Ministerial Advisory Committee, Johnson & Johnson, Pfizer, and Moderna have been identified as suitable vaccines at this present moment, looking at all the factors and variables that are in existence. But the Merck has also indicated that we need to be cognizant of the fact that this information around the vaccines that have been selected or identified may change as the context changes. So we should be cognizant of that, and Merck will update us of this as it happens. Just to update the portfolio committee on some of the negotiations that are taking place beyond the vaccines that have been recommended. Government is negotiating with Sputnik, with Sinovac and Sinopharm, and we've indicated how many of the suppliers are present in the country and where we are in terms of the approval processes with SAHPRA. Similarly, with Sinovac, there's a company called Pneumolax, which has the right to distribute Sinovac. Sputnik is an organization called, there are several of them, so I'm not going to give one name. And then Sinopharm has signed a non-disclosure agreement and have requested that once feedback has been received through SAHPRA, then we can engage further with those discussions. Just also to update the portfolio committee on some of the processes of approvals, that Johnson & Johnson is almost at the stage where it is approved. There were four stages that SAHPRA had requested for considering the application, and we are now on phase 4, and the vaccine is almost ready for approval for full market authorization. And then in terms of Pfizer-BioNTech, submissions of the application were made on the 8th of January, and that they've applied for a Section 21 and full market registration, and all these are still being finalized by SAHPRA. For Sputnik V, what is happening here is that data has been submitted for assessment by SAHPRA, and SAHPRA is reviewing the good manufacturing practices at the sites of manufacturing of Sputnik by the Gamaleya Institute and associated entities that are manufacturing. And once information on clinical and non-clinical data has been received and assessed, we will have some outcomes of where we are with Sputnik. And similarly with Sinovac, we are still waiting for completeness of information for Section 21 application as well as for full market authorization for the rest of the vaccine data. We just want to also update the portfolio committee on where we are with AstraZeneca vaccine, the vaccines that had arrived in our country, the million doses. Almost all the vaccines have now been distributed through the AU to countries that have indicated their willingness and wish to use the vaccine. And we've outlined those countries in the list. and we are almost done with the vaccine distribution. Only a few doses left, and they will be distributed before the 1st of April 2020, conditions permitting. It's around 39,000 doses that are remaining in the country that will be returned to countries that wish to use these vaccines, repatriated, sorry. So in terms of the rollout phases, we have identified three phases. Phase one, which is what we identified as vaccination of healthcare workers. Initially, we had said 1.2, but based on our resourcing, we will be able to vaccinate 608,295 in phase one of the healthcare workers, starting with the Sisonke, which is giving us 300,000, plus an additional 200,000 that we will be receiving, plus the remainder of the vaccines that will be arriving from Johnson & Johnson and Pfizer. In phase two, we are expecting to vaccinate around 18,350,140 people. And we have divided phase two into the first phase, which is a phase where we are going to be vaccinating the over 60-year-olds. And this will include workers. It will include people in congregate settings and general population. But in this category, it's over 60-year-olds that are going to be vaccinated. And the dates are from May 17 to July 31st. And then in part B of phase two, it's going to be extending from August to 31st of October 2021. And we're expecting to vaccinate around 12,900,000 people in the population, targeting those that are above 40 years of age. This will include workers through the occupational health service stream, people in congregate settings, and the general population through a community stream that we have identified. Those with comorbidities and workers in high-risk settings will be prioritized for this category. And then in phase three, we expect to vaccinate 22,600,640,000. And this will mean that the rest of the population that is eligible for vaccination will be vaccinated during this phase. It will last from the 1st of November to February 28, 2022. And all in all, we are expecting to vaccinate around 41,555,000 in the nation. Then we want to update the portfolio committee on our healthcare worker registration through the EVDS, Electronic Vaccine Data System, that as the 30th of March at 1400 hours, we had 775,912 healthcare workers registered on our EVDS, and we break it down into health professionals and patient facing, and we can see that Gauteng, Western Cape and KZN has got the highest number of healthcare workers registered. We also update the portfolio committee on the vaccinations that have taken place through the Sisonke rollout program to date. As at 12:30 this afternoon, we had around 244,907 healthcare workers vaccinated, and we demonstrate that Gauteng has got the highest number of healthcare workers who have received the vaccine, followed by KZN and Western Cape. We also want to note that, you know, of these vaccinations, we still have around 6,875 vaccinations that were completed manually that still have to be captured, and we'll capture this at the end of the day. And then for phase one rollout sites, in addition to the Sisonke, we have identified additional sites, 89 in the Eastern Cape, and all in all, I'm not going to go through each of the provinces, but all in all, we have got around 2,085 vaccination sites that are going to be used for phase one, even beyond Sisonke. And then we have assembled this the portfolio of these sites for both the public and private sectors, and we've indicated where they are, but we also highlight that in the private sector, in addition, we have 300 pharmacies that have been selected, and we expect that with these 300 pharmacies and the additional capacity that will be identified through the private sector, we will be able to complete these vaccinations in the private sector within 30 days. So we are continuously updating this site. This slide we have shared with the portfolio committee previously, indicating in detail where our primary distribution sites are going to be, and it demonstrates in each of the provinces where we are going to be keeping our buffer stock, where we are going to be using depots, and where we are going to be providing direct delivery to our facilities, whether it's hospitals, or whether it's the district offices in our provinces. So I'm not going to go into detail. I hope that the honorable members have had an opportunity of appraising themselves. Then we just want to also highlight the overall aims and objectives of phase one and phase two, why we are vaccinating. We've got a short-term primary goal and a medium-term goal that we are looking at. Firstly, we have identified that the highest risk groups must be vaccinated first if we want to reduce or prevent mortality and morbidity. And therefore, we'll start with the highest risk groups and work downwards to lower risk groups as our short-term objective to prevent mortality and morbidity. And then our second objective is to build herd immunity. And to build herd immunity, our strategy is to vaccinate as many people as possible, but as soon as possible. So it's going to require that we vaccinate fast, but this is contingent on several things, including the availability of vaccines. And overall, the two objectives are going to produce a situation where we are going to help ourselves to survive the onslaught of the virus, but also to contribute towards the prevention of lockdowns and other social and economic disruptions that we have experienced, and also to ensure that society and education and the economy can open up and that we resume a semblance of normal life during the era of the pandemic. The key elements, therefore, of our strategy are based on ensuring effective leadership, maximizing speed, ensuring fair and efficient access, and standardizing delivery processes to ensure quality, and minimizing service transaction in our facilities. We have outlined the interventions for each of the areas and facilitated by a strong public positioning. We must be geared for speed to implement this thing as rapidly as possible. And we must also look at the principles of equity and fairness, quality, and also ensuring efficiency. Then we want to just bring to the attention of the portfolio committee a key strategy that we are using for rollout. In the previous slides, I had indicated that we are going to be looking at people who are at the highest risk of morbidity and mortality. And then we use what we call age-based sequencing and prioritization to ensure that those that are most vulnerable are going to be prioritized first. So based on this, we will start with people who are above the age of 60 years and move down as quickly as possible. And then this will ensure that as we are sequencing, our criteria must be as simple as possible. So we must not create confusion as people go into our facilities. But the most important is that we must prevent death and severe illnesses associated with older age groups, those that are above 45 years. And we also know that some comorbidities, such as diabetes and hypertension, are also associated with complications. Study that was conducted by colleagues at one of the medical schemes indicates that if you compare age-related hazard with morbidity, chronic illnesses, we can see that the higher age groups have got more likelihood of experiencing death. The 70 to 79 age band shows that, you know, their adjusted hazard ratio is much, much higher than the other age groups, but is even higher than those that are diabetic. But if you look at diabetes, for example, and you compare it with age, you can see that those are between 60 and 64 years of age are comparable to those that have got diabetes and uncontrolled diabetes. So this is the model that we have used to try and come up with an age-adjusted criteria and also sequence it based on chronic illnesses and diseases in our population. Then we just want to explain firstly how the population has been targeted so that we can implement our sequencing to prevent severe COVID illness, disease, and death, and then what our strategy is for phase
Dr.
two.
Dr. Tulare, I want you to continue, but I just wanted to record that the minister has now joined. And minister, if you can prepare yourself, you'll make your opening comments after the presentation, and then we'll engage with your questions. The deputy minister has also joined us. Continue, Dr. Tulare, and we are close to wrapping up.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. So what we have done is, in terms of phase two, we have indicated that we are going to be looking at several streams, the stream of the working population, the stream of people in congregate setting, and the stream of general population, taking into account that we have said that our age categorization requires that we start with people who are 60 years and over, and then we move down to the next age band of 50 and 60, and then 40 to 50 years, and also prioritizing those with comorbidities and workers in high-risk settings. So in principle, what we are saying is that older people will be prioritized, and age-based sequencing will be applied, and in the category of workers and people in congregate settings, we will start with people who are over 60 years of age. It's very, very important that this principle is understood. And then we have mentioned that we are going to be having streams. We have got the general population stream, we have got a work-based stream, and then we have got an institution-based stream that is based on the principle of age-based prioritization. And the most important thing that we want to indicate here is if down the line we find that we have to ration the vaccines, this implies that there has to be a trade-off between people who are less than 45 years in the general population and employees who are less than 40 years in high-risk industries and industry workers. And these will be prioritized because of the complexities that we have identified previously. We also want to indicate that as an age-based prioritization approach, we have looked at all the provinces and where our populations that are above 60 years are located, and we have indicated in this slide that the Eastern Cape, even though as a percentage they do not have as many people who are above 60 years of age as some of the other provinces, but in terms of the highest proportion of the people who are above 60 years of age, the Eastern Cape has got the highest number, whereas the majority of the people who are above 60 in terms of numbers are found in Gauteng. So when we are preparing our vaccine allocations and inoculation strategy, we'll be taking this into account. And then we want to just demonstrate that with all our provinces and all our districts, what we have done a clusters of where we find the majority of the 60 years old and above across all provinces. And this is an example. We demonstrate where the clusters are in Gauteng, but we have got similar slides, similar maps for other provinces that demonstrate where they are. So in our strategy for rollout of the vaccine, we would know exactly where those populations that we want to target are located. Then our planning approach requires three mechanisms: identifying the target population and registering the beneficiaries based on this target population, looking at special groups such as workers with access to occupational health services and indicating that these will be vaccinated through this site, and also groups in congregate settings that will be vaccinated through mobile services such as those that are in correctional services or universities. We also look at the other groups that are going to be covered in phase two, those that have got a risk of severe disease, such as older persons with comorbidities. And also importantly, workers that do not have access to occupational health services, such as those that are informal in informal sectors. And then based on this, we have now done a mapping of existing health infrastructure so that it can target these groups. And we have also looked at the required mix of sites and staffing mix. And also we are working on ensuring that all the sites are ready for vaccination for phase two. We have also worked on some of the requirements of the occupational health services, and there's a work stream that is currently in active planning. We are working with stakeholders at NEDLAC and with DPSA, with other public sector entities such as the SOEs and private sector, including the mining sector. What we know is that we've got around 20 million workers in the country, with 14 million in the formal sector and 5 million in the informal sector. And we are going to be using whatever infrastructure that avails itself to ensure that we vaccinate accordingly. What is also important is that there's work that is in progress in terms of identifying and registering these workers, working with some of the partners that I've indicated, the DPSA, the SOEs, and the private sector. And then we are working with these partners also to identify workers at high risk of either comorbidities or of contracting the virus, and also linking these workers to vaccination sites. And then in the public sector, there's a project team that has been established, and then it's working as a multi-departmental, multi-sectoral project team, and then it reports to the work stream on occupational health service, which is part of the National Vaccination Implementation Team. The DPSA has been engaged for a vaccination of public sector workers, and it's going to be providing all the information that is required in terms of where they are by district, by age cohort. And this information is going to be being used for planning purposes. And then we may be linking this to the personal number and linking this to the electronic vaccine data system as part of either self-registration or maybe bulk registration based on the information that will be provided by DPSA. Working with GEMS also to support the rollout of the vaccination for public servants, and for those that are not on GEMS, they will be linked to other vaccination sites that are outside of the GEMS capacity. And at the appropriate time, the Department of Public Service and Administration will issue a circular or circulars informing the public servants of where they are going to be vaccinated or the process that is to be followed. And then in terms of phase two and three vaccination sites, we are going to be using either existing health service infrastructure or temporary vaccination sites. And the existing health infrastructure will be either in the public or private sector, including in community pharmacies, whereas temporary vaccination centers may include fixed facilities or mobile facilities. They may be medium, large, or very large. And then they may also be linked to existing infrastructure such as voting stations, schools, and community halls. And then we just indicate here that the journey that the vaccinee is going to be following will be in two forms. One will be an off-site journey, and then the other one is on-site. For the off-site journey, firstly, we want to highlight that it's important that we undertake social mobilization and create demand for vaccination through ensuring that the community understands and is mobilized and is ready to receive the vaccine. And then what would result from that is that the communities would want to register on the electronic vaccine data system, and the information will be uploaded as a beneficiary database into the EVDS. Where people cannot register themselves, they'll be assisted through a manual process so that they can register and come onto the EVDS. And then there will be information that is sent to those that have registered through SMS or whatever mechanism that it will be appropriate at that stage. And then on site, at the vaccination site, it will be required that those that come and present themselves once they have received an SMS would go through a COVID screening of some sort, because it's not safe for people who have got who have contracted COVID to receive the vaccine. So it's very important that this screening is done. We'll validate the registration, and then the person will receive the vaccine, and then they will be observed after being vaccinated to ensure that we look for adverse events, and then they will exit the system thereafter. So this is the journey that will be followed by those that are going to be inoculated. The next step, therefore, is to focus on phase 1B, which is the post-Sisonke phase, before we reach the 1st of May 2020, and then we'll then focus on phase 2 and phase 3. And we are doing several work to ensure that, you know, granular definition of target groups is finalized, and that the service delivery platform is prepared and ready for inoculation, including in our workplaces and other sites that have been identified. Provinces are working on their implementation plans, and also there's a provincial and district vaccination teams that are currently being established. And we'll be linking with communication and demand generation work streams that are part of the National Vaccination Coordinating Committee, and make sure that communication continues on an ongoing basis to ensure that we create demand. And then also the work that is currently being done is to finalize the processes of registration and scheduling, and at the appropriate time, the announcements will be made for each of the phases that are eligible for registering. And then importantly is that a call center will be established where the population, the public, can be informed about the necessary questions that they might have. The last part of this presentation, Honorable Chair, is around our diplomats and people who are stationed abroad, and our diplomatic missions and international organizations that are based in South Africa. What we want to indicate here is that it's important that we identify our diplomats that are stationed, especially in countries where the vaccine might not be easily available, and that there needs to be a dispensation that is created for them to come into the country, receive their vaccine as quickly as possible when their categorization is arrived at. So if ever it's an age-based categorization, they must receive their vaccine at that stage. But we will ensure that if ever they happen to be in the country at that stage, they are also vaccinated. What we are also proposing here is that these diplomats who are stationed outside of the country, but in countries where vaccines are not easily available, receive the single dose vaccine so that they don't have to wait longer than they're supposed to be in the country, so that they can go back to their stations. In terms of diplomatic missions in South Africa, it's important categories of citizens or residents in country are also offered the vaccination. And this is what is practiced globally in line with the Vienna Convention, and that we are not going to find ourselves wanting on some of these conventions that we are supposed to subscribe by. So the foreign diplomat will be treated like citizens and will be inoculated in accordance with our various phases that we have identified. And foreign diplomats, like South Africans, will also be categorized in line with the categories. Just to indicate that in the continent, we have got around 362 South Africans that are stationed in the African continent, and we'll be looking at this with a specific interest, and that between 12,000 and 15,000 foreign accredited diplomats live in the country, and those are the numbers that we are going to be looking at. And therefore, Honorable Chair, I want to summarize by saying that the 362 diplomats who are stationed in the African continent will be considered for priority a single dose vaccine, and they will have to pre-register on the EVDS, and then we are saying that they must receive the one single dose vaccine just so that they can be able to return back to their mission, and that foreign diplomats will be vaccinated in line with our strategy, and that foreign missions will receive a note verbal indicating this fact. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, for the opportunity.
Thank you, Dr. Tulare. You have tried your best under those conditions. Thank you. Welcome, Honorable Minister. Welcome, Honorable Deputy Minister. Our situation as a portfolio committee that even though we're in recess, we felt that it was critically important that we honor our fortnightly engagement with the department because of the current pandemic that we have, so that you could update us. Thanks that you were able to give us a slot that is appropriate to also meet with you. So we will then give you a slot to make your opening remarks, and then you will then will be fielding questions from the members, because thanks, this presentation came yesterday. I'm tempted not to show my video because of the challenge where I am, but it may just switch off, but I'm still available just a bit, and then I will switch it off. Minister, it would be important that we note that there has been a change of leadership in the Minister Advisory Committee, and maybe there was no big problem with that. You could just deal with that part as part of your comments if you can. There's always a worry there, however, because we hope that you are being supported by a sort of a leadership that is able to, even if they differ, sort the differences within that consultative programs. There's always been one single professor who comes out and also have a different view outside the collective. Now, some of us are not very familiar with the situation where if you have your views not taken care of within the collective, then you can still find a space to express them. We don't get confused, we get concerned, because here is a scientist. Some of us are not at that level of being specialists to argue when the specialist has given a view on the matter. You must assist us how we could handle some of those things, but maybe let me not rob you and give you a slot now to make your opening remarks. Thereafter, honorable members, let me read now a list. The members who will then field the questions after Minister has given his remarks are the following. Number one, Honorable Ismail. Two, Honorable Van Staden. Three, Honorable Chirwa. Four, Honorable Wahobe. Five, Honorable Wilson. Six, Honorable Gela. Seven, Honorable Sukers. Eight, Honorable Hlengwa. Nine, Honorable Imam Sheikh. And the last hand I saw was Honorable Dr. Jacobs. I haven't seen Dr. Tembekwayo raising her hand, but maybe she's covered.
I'm number 10 before Dr. Jacobs.
Oh, you're number 10. I saw Dr. Jacobs writing his number and the name next to number 10. So you are number 10.
And he's 11.
Dr. Jacobs, number 11. Any other member I've left out? No one. Thank you. In that order, Honorable
Member. Number 12.
Kimberly, number 12. So Kasha, number 12. Thank you very much. Anyone? No one. Okay. Honorable Minister, your slot now.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, Deputy Minister, Director General, and all the officials. Thanks for your indulgence. As I was saying, I was traveling, so I couldn't be on the spot exactly as you opened. Apologies. Let me then say thanks to the team for the presentation they've given. Let me start by talking about the issue of the change in the leadership in the Ministerial Advisory Committee. As I think all of us would be aware, we've got three Ministerial Advisory Committees that have assisted us to deal with the issue of COVID-19. The one Ministerial Advisory Committee was led by Professor Abdul Karim, Salim Abdul Karim, co-chaired by Professor Marianne Jacobs. These two have ably led this committee over the past 6 months, seven, 8 months, and then before then, almost a whole year now with Professor Abdul Karim. We must say that Professor Abdul Karim has been a very outstanding leader. As we all know, he's a top scientist who has towered not just in South Africa, but globally amongst other scientists, and has won numerous awards even during the time he was at the Ministerial Advisory Committee. We've benefited from his assistance, from his guidance, from his depth of knowledge, and so he has requested to be released to go back to the work that he had been doing that relates to research and academic activities. He left some work incomplete and actually wished to leave as early as September last year. It was through my persuasion that we asked him to stay on, and so he stayed on until the last day, so that he completed exactly 1 year of being part of the Ministerial Advisory Committee. We thank him profusely for his work, and so he'll continue to be available to us as we move on. Professor Marianne Jacobs, also a very accomplished researcher, originally a pediatrician, but also still available to continue the work as a co-chair of the Ministerial Advisory Committee. She has also indicated that she had left some work which was not completed, and so would like to be released at some point in the next few months in the future, but would not move leave immediately, because wants to make sure that the new leadership can get all the support that they need. So we have appointed in the place of Professor Abdul Karim another highly accomplished and experienced scientist, Professor Kolega Mlisana, who is also a medical doctor basic training, but also a microbiologist in training, has worked quite a lot in a number of areas and is part of the team that's supported the NICD and the NHLS, and has been also part of the Ministerial Advisory Committee, making her also to be someone fairly familiar with all the issues that are in the Ministerial Advisory Committee. Many of us have seen her already addressing issues in public. So we are very happy that she was able to accept the appointment, and we look forward to very strong leadership of these two particular scientists. She's also doing other work as part of SANEC, as well as part of the Health Professions Council of South Africa, and is fairly familiar with a wide range of issues that relate to health. The other changes relate to the fact that Professor Berishu, who is the chairman of the Ministerial Advisory Committee on Vaccines, has actually been moved from the main advisory committee to focus full-time on the Ministerial Advisory Committee on Vaccines. So he will not be on the two Ministerial Advisory Committees. There are other members that are going to be adding onto the Ministerial Advisory Committee. For example, we are bringing in people who have got experience in modeling, in genomics, and a few other skills that we brought in. We will actually show the list as soon as all of that is concluded, but we're basically waiting to make sure that all of them are informed, and then we can make it available. The other change which would have come in is that Professor Mark Mendelson, and many of us know him also as one of the top clinicians based in Western Cape, is also going to move from the Ministerial Advisory Committee to chair Ministerial Advisory Committee on Antimicrobial Resistance. Now, this is another area where a whole silent pandemic is taking place, and we've had a long meeting with him just to say that this committee in particular has really lifted its profile so that people are aware of the dangers and the risks that are associated with antimicrobial resistance. And so this is going to be doing the work on that side. And tomorrow morning, they will be having their inaugural meeting. And we have agreed that between myself, the Deputy Minister, the Director General, we will work very closely with this committee to lift the profile of the committee and make sure that these issues are particularly important. I'm sure we're all aware that the level of resistance is rising in South Africa, and this is a problem that the whole world is facing. But in addition, there's also the challenge of the use of antibiotics amongst in the veterinary services, amongst the animals, to improve their, to improve beef production. Now, this has got a cross reaction to humans, and therefore that begins to create another complicated situation of antimicrobial resistance. And in this case, they are looking at a number of them, for example, the issues of the viral resistance to antimicrobials, the fungal, as well as the bacterial. we're familiar with nosocomial infection with a number of bacteria that are involved in this, the Klebsiella, the Pseudomonas, the Acinocortobacter, and a whole lot of other nosocomial infections that really cause huge amount of mortality because of that. On the other hand, we're also picking up quite a bit of those on the multiple drug resistant tuberculosis, and also we have fungal, particularly Candida auris, which is also one other major agent that compromises life, particularly the frail and the patients who've been in hospital and ventilators and so on. So this is basically just to say, therefore, that there's a change in the leadership, but it's actually strengthening the committees because we expect more work to be done. Of course, from the main ministerial advisory committee, the issues have stabilized, and so we are much more comfortable than we were before, and so we believe that that work will continue. Then there's another ministerial advisory committee on behavioral change led by Bishop Mbumlwana, with the civil society, churches, traditional leaders, and traditional healers, and so on. So that also continues to do work, and we believe that's going to be doing a lot of work during this time as we communicate the issues of vaccination and improving the level of acceptance of the vaccines in society. So that is, Jefferson, briefly what has gone on in terms of the changes in the leadership of the Ministerial Advisory Committee. The Department of Health is committed to vaccinating the entire adult population over a period of 1 year since the start of the date of vaccination, the 17th of February, and to vaccinate as many adults as possible within 2021. We are as keen as all fellow South Africans to establish parity with our counterparts globally, and we consider ourselves to be participants in a global vaccination campaign. We're committed to rolling out vaccines from mid-February through a phased program, which would see frontline health workers being vaccinated in 3 months, high-risk groups being vaccinated in the ensuing 6 months, and then the healthy adults in the remaining 3 months. We're still on track on this with regards to the time frame, although there have been delays in the first phase, but we still have not lost the original phased time frames that were proposed. We can confirm that negotiations on vaccine procurement, mainly on the two companies, are complete, and signing will be taking place in the next 48 hours. We also want to assure South Africans that our working relationships with manufacturers are strengthened by continuous engagement, which began as early as June 2020. Whilst we did not have financial muscle to engage in unhedged bets, we did the scientific fortitude to closely track the research and development of the respective vaccine candidates, and began to engage as soon as there was clarity on safety and efficacy of particular vaccines, even before the vaccines may have obtained emergency use authorization. Now, we remember, therefore, that as a result of that, we ended up procuring 1.5 million doses of AstraZeneca, and in the process, we're there to abandon the utilization of these. But in fact, were it not for that, we would have actually vaccinated as many people as we could have within that period, so that more than a million doses would have actually been dispensed. But the delay has been as a result of the fact that we couldn't use those vaccines, and of late, we then have started with the Johnson & Johnson vaccines, which I'll say a little bit more about a bit later. As announced by His Excellency President Cyril Ramaphosa, in addition to the 11 million doses that we have secured from Johnson & Johnson, which I announced to the House and to the Portfolio Committee before, we have successfully pushed for a further 20 million and are currently negotiating the terms of those additional doses. This means now we have 31 million doses on J&J in the pipeline. These are confirmed, except of course we just need to close the agreement in a matter of a day or two. And due to the ease of storage and the fact that it's a one dose regimen, we find this most convenient, and this was also recommended by our Ministerial Advisory Committee. So we aim to deploy Johnson & Johnson preferably to rural areas and to population groups which are having difficulties with various challenges such as the elderly who might have difficulties returning for the second dose, where the storage does not offer such a challenge, where logistics might be difficult, and therefore one dose is good enough to make sure that someone is already properly vaccinated. We think that it's a high priority vaccine, and the majority of South Africans will receive this one. We'll make sure that you know, those in the rural areas are able to get as good a vaccine as anyone else. The first batch of market of Johnson & Johnson for South Africans have already been ready since March, and are currently undergoing compulsory safety and sterility checks, as is stipulated that the vaccines must be distributed after 1 month in production. In reality, you would have seen yesterday that the production is going on, and so that for us is a huge you know, boost in terms of our excitement and hope about the vaccination program. The proximity of Johnson & Johnson manufacturing plant in Tabakwa has proven to be of strategic importance and lays the foundation for advancement and establishment of local intellectual property and expansion of manufacturing capability. Already the work in this regard is being done, and I'm sure at some point President will talk about this, but the President will be addressing the nation tonight about this inspection of the manufacturing plant yesterday. All I can say is that it was very successful, and we're very, very excited that with the leadership that the President has given in this regard. In addition to the 31 million doses of Johnson & Johnson, we had already announced before that we had signed a term sheet with Pfizer, 20 million doses, and then we also had an agreement signed with COVAX, and these are also part of the armament. With regards to COVAX, at this stage, they can only offer AstraZeneca and Novavax, and we have advised them that as per advice of Ministerial Advisory Committee on Vaccines, these candidate vaccines are currently not suitable for our setting, we have alternatives, and so we think it's important that this point needs to be made here, because we've seen some comments in the media to say that we should actually be utilizing these. We actually think that the alternatives that are available make it unnecessary to utilize this particular vaccine, but in fact that we should pursue the idea of a study that we've spoken about. We'll therefore continue to leverage our strong relationship with COVAX to ensure that we can be prioritized when they can get the other vaccines. Now, there's going to be a whole lot of engagement with COVAX. I've seen the letter where they wanted us to formally table the fact that we are not taking AstraZeneca, and they've indicated some of the constraints that they have in supplying the vaccines of preference, and we are ready to engage. We think that COVAX should not really find themselves in a difficult position because of the research findings that were announced in South Africa by Professor Madi that made us to use AstraZeneca as first preference. So we'll have a very cooperative arrangement between us and COVAX to see how to manage our agreement on supply of vaccines. But that work is being done with actually directed that the Director General should engage with the COVAX on that, in that regard. In addition, the Director General has also been directed to complete negotiations around Sputnik and Sinovac and Sinopharm and report back on agent basis. I indicated some time back that we've had several meetings with this particular manufacturers, particularly with their ambassadors present, and we are looking at how to finalize this matter. The respective applications to SAHPRA are currently being considered on a rolling basis. We're aware, of course, of the process, the progress on the Sputnik, how far they've gone. We're aware that they actually submitted some of the sites for inspection by SAHPRA, which one I think is out in Turkey. And so SAHPRA was moving in that direction to process their registration. Sinovac has actually submitted their papers about 2 weeks ago, and so we are aware that they will continue to be analyzed. And Sinopharm has obtained what is called a file number, and they are waiting, the SAHPRA is awaiting the submission of detailed submission from Sinopharm. So a lot of work is being done in this regard, and I indicated as well in the past that there's a lot of interest in us collaborating with these particular players, particularly because of the understanding that the BRICS countries need to work together on the vaccine issue. We also continue to monitor progress on the Cuban candidate, Soberana, and engage the Cuban ambassador. We've had the team continuously involved in following this matter up. Then with regard to the Sisonga Protocol, we are happy to indicate that at this point, as you have seen, we are over 230 people who have been vaccinated and using the J&J protocol vaccines. These 200,000 of them will be arriving in the next 2 weeks to be completed within the next 2 weeks. And so they will be arriving on schedule. We are very appreciative of the support from the Johnson & Johnson global team who have gone all out to collect and retrieve many of these doses. And as you'll realize, some of the slowness in which the doses were coming into the country is linked to the fact that you need clearance in various countries to release these doses and then relabel them and bring them to us. So this work has gone on adequately. We're currently in advanced stages for preparing for the rest of the mass vaccination programs, and we are hoping that we should be targeting to reach maximum of around 200,000 citizens a day. Of course, the days will vary, but we're really wanting to push. You have seen how we've targeted over 2,000 sites. In the next few days, I'll also then unveil concrete monthly vaccine delivery schedule, which is being finalized. We're waiting for the particular manufacturing companies to give us this monthly delivery schedule. So we will then be able to unveil it for all to see, because by then we'll know that there's a clearer commitment beyond the quarter, but just in terms of which, how much is going to come for every month. That's going to allow us space now to be able to open up all the sites, knowing exactly how many people are going to be vaccinated as the vaccines roll in on an incremental basis. I have also directed that the DG agency meets with the private sector to agree on the allocation of vaccines between public and private sector sites, revise daily and weekly vaccination targets based on firm commitments on vaccine delivery. So when these numbers are well known, we will then be able to separate the numbers out to say how much will have to be reserved for the private sector so that we all roll out at the same time. We will make these discussions, these announcements in due course, and we are continuously involving engaging the private sector in this regard. In recognizing our inextricably tied fortunes, government, the public and private sector, business and civil society have come together in an extraordinary feat of social solidarity to ensure that success of the mass vaccination campaign is determined by all of society approach. Human Resource Research Council conducted research. They've shown that most of the South Africans want the vaccine, notwithstanding all the misinformation and conspiracy theories that attempted to dissuade our people from doing what they know to be right to do. We know that this confidence in vaccination has been fostered by a scientific community who consistently assure South Africans that we approach the vaccination in the face of the dominant 501 YB2 variant with precision and the utmost attention to scientific evidence. Our people appreciate this and thus have full confidence in the vaccine the government chooses to procure. And these will come in through the government, will be available for both public and private sector. I think also I must say that my major concern at this point is not so much that there's going to be vaccine hesitancy, but is that there's going to be an overwhelming desire to participate in the vaccination that we need to send a very good communication for people to understand that they should not swamp the vaccination sites ahead of the numbers of the vaccines that should be available. We expect that these numbers are going to be building up, particularly in quarter two and quarter three. That's when quarter three and quarter four, that's when the bulk of the vaccines will be more easily available. By then, of course, we think that our system will be much better oiled, but we will have to appeal for people to, you know, cooperate with us so that you don't have, you know, overwhelming numbers in our vaccine site. At this moment, we have had very good cooperation, and as you have seen, we still have to finish off with the health workers who were on the first phase. We therefore all have a part to play to build this confidence and implement the most ambitious vaccination rollout campaign of all time. History will judge us not on our ability to debate the matter out, but how we contributed. That is what we actually did to ensure that our people are protected and our economy is safe. Each and every member of parliament is in a position to mobilize a particular constituency which they oversee. We as government commit to providing the information, as we will now, to empower members of parliament so that they can play an enabling role for community members to effectively participate in the mass rollout campaign. We need all the leaders to be working together as we communicate what is going to be happening in the community, so that from leadership there should be one message to help our people to know how to access this particular campaign. Meanwhile, the global scientific community, including WHO, has warned every country that the response to COVID-19 remains multi-pronged until population immunity can be scientifically demonstrated. This means that we still need to continue with the basic health protocols and containment measures that have worked for us, even as we face a threatening variant dominating our pandemic. At this stage, positive cases have reduced, but the risk of super spread activities may just turn the tide and hasten the third wave, and therefore we need to be very cautious. The President will issue guidance to the nation about the provisions, what provisions will need to be observed during the Easter holidays, and we urge fellow South Africans residing in our country to comply for the sake of our health and our economy. Beyond the Easter, winter will make South Africa more vulnerable for high transmission, but we've conquered this virus before through adherence to the regulations and observations or observing basic health protocols, especially the wearing of the mask. We need to learn from the experience that we've gone through and persevere on until our population immunity is achieved. The Director General and myself, the Deputy Minister, have approved an Easter holidays campaign to conscientize and empower citizens to prevent a third wave following the holiday period. We have also approved a high-frequency communication campaign to share information to members of the public and to mobilize priority groups as and when they are called upon to vaccinate. I want to thank the members of the portfolio committee for coming through even during the break, because I think it's important to keep to what you had indicated earlier, a regular update so that you are able to share on some of the areas where you are concerned, and we'll also look at what needs to be done to reshape this campaign. This is going to be, it's not going to be a perfect campaign, but your suggestions, your advices are always going to be welcome as we try to move into this very unknown territory. But we are very, very hopeful at this point about it. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. This is the end of my submission. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Mkhize, Minister, for that very comprehensive opening remarks. I'm sure some of the members' questions are probably answered, but nevertheless, we would work towards that. Honorable members, we had indicated that we would like to engage until just a minute to 7 o'clock, but then there was a correction that the president starts speaking at 7:30. Though some of us would have loved to listen to this very eminent Ms. Grootboom, who's reading the news for the last time on SABC 1 after 30 years of her service in SABC. But let's see how we go. Let's start with the leaders have indicated members to ask and engage with the department. Thank you. Honorable Ismail, you're number one.
Good afternoon and thank you for the presentation. Can we get a full list, a breakdown per province of these vaccination sites, please? Even if this can be emailed to us later. Is there a clause in the Johnson & Johnson contract?
Ms. Ismail, we are losing you.
If the government must establish the mechanism to cover damage claims. Oh, sorry, Chair. I was saying again, good afternoon. Thank you for the presentation. Can we get a full list that is a breakdown per province of these vaccination sites? Secondly, is there a clause in the Johnson & Johnson contract that states that government must establish a no-fault compensation clause. That's an NFC mechanism to cover damage claims. And if so, how fast will government be able to establish or implement this? And who will be the entity implementing such a clause, and how will it be funded? Also, what security or tracking measures have been put in place to prevent the theft of the vaccine? Or are medical staff, you know, or how is medical staff going to be able to identify that it is indeed legitimate, you know, that the vaccine hasn't been tampered with? What were the reasons that Aspen was chosen over BioVac for the manufacturing of these vaccines? Please, if you can get some understanding on that. How many shares does possibly, you know, the President Cyril Ramaphosa and others in ANC leadership have in Aspen, if any? A minister has previously stated that South Africans can expect 600,000 doses of the Pfizer COVID vaccine before the end of March. Can we get any confirmation when these vaccines will be arriving in South Africa and if this timeline is still correct? Now, we know that the Pfizer vaccine requires a long-term ultra-cold storage at, you know, less than 70 degrees Celsius, or short-term storage for 2 weeks at minus 20 degrees Celsius. You know, these doses can also be temporarily stored in their shipping containers with the use of dry ice. What storage option will South Africa be using for these doses that of Pfizer that we receive? And a few weeks ago, Minister said that specialized storage facilities have been secured for the Pfizer vaccine. Which facilities are these and where are they located, please? Where will the Pfizer vaccines be distributed once they arrive in the country? Will the department be using the same vaccination sites as for the Sisonke protocol, or will the Pfizer doses be going to a new list of sites? I know the minister did outline that, you know, the rural areas will probably be, you know, Johnson & Johnson will be the best for it. But I'm just trying to figure for the Pfizer doses, where will these sites be actually?
Honorable Ismail, leave other questions for other members, please. We have gone to number 10 now.
Can I take one more, Chair?
One more.
Okay. The Department of Health has had a team investigating cold storage capacity in South Africa. Can we have more details on what the team found, or are there any additional measures the department needs to put into place in anticipation of the Pfizer vaccine? And if so, how long are these preparations? Thank you.
Honorable Van Staden.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good evening, Minister. Thank you for the presentation. Honorable Minister, with due respect, this feels to me that this presentation we have saw this afternoon is a bit of a new rollout phase. While the goalposts have been keep moving since our first meeting here on January this year. First, the numbers came through that 40 million people will be vaccinated by the end of the year on that stage. And in the Minister, in your own words, at those stages, you were speaking about 316 people had to be vaccinated per day. Then the number came through of 1.1 million people by the end of March. We are now on the end of March. Then the new number came through of 700,000, and then another new number of 500,000. And now we saw in this presentation this afternoon another new number by the end of May this year for 608,000 healthcare workers to be vaccinated. And then it seems like the new phase two is going to run from May to July, 5 million people, and the new phase three from August and October for 12 million people, and the last phase for November to February next year for 22 million people. Now, there's some views that this program could not be realistic, and but it can be an unrealistic program due to lessons learned earlier this year, and that these numbers will never be reached, even if the goalpost keeps moving. Now, I think, Minister, with all due respect, I think we must be honest with each other, and let's be honest with the citizens of this country. And we must be honest today by acknowledging that the vaccination program is heading for, it seems like a bit of a disaster, just like with the vaccine procurements in last year and this year. And I think we must be honest and realistic and tell South Africans from the start that the population will actually not be vaccinated on time. And we must also be honest about the problems that the department face, then there will not be such a big disappointment coming from South Africans when the vaccine targets are not being reached. So my question, Honourable Minister, is the following. How are you planning to roll out this program we have seen this afternoon, which was presented to us today, and to stay on course, not to move the goalpost time to time again? And if you are already behind with the new phase we saw this afternoon, as presented on slide 7, with 368,000 vaccinations for healthcare workers, how are we going to keep on track with these new targets? On AstraZeneca, I just want to know for what amount was that the African Union purchased the 1 million doses from South Africa, and when will payment be received? On the healthcare workers self-registration, the number on 29th March was 775,000. I just want to know, why is this registration number now only on this total? Are there some problems we need to know about the online system? On the new rollout sites, which we saw on slide 10 today, can this committee please be informed where exactly these vaccination sites will be in each of the 9 provinces in the public and private sector? Have a number of hospitals now increased from the original 23 to do vaccinations? And if yes, how many is public and how many is private hospitals? And can we get a list of who they are? Your aims and objectives to be set through this phase 2 we saw on this program this afternoon, and 3, to prevent lockdowns and other social and economic disruption, is welcomed. I think the opening up of society, education and the economy to resume in full capacity is also welcome. But while governments are not reaching the set goals and targets on these vaccinations, it is not the best way to lock down communities or to apply sticker level regulations. Chair, my last question will be, Honourable Minister, when do you plan to open these phase 2 and 3 for registrations? Can we get the exact dates on that, please? And my last question is, what plans do the Honourable Minister and the Department have in place to ensure that people do not jump the queue like we saw earlier this year, but rather wait their turn to be vaccinated? Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Much appreciated.
Members don't have the last two and the last, like Honourable Van Staten. Honourable Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I didn't quite get if the Minister mentioned who will be replacing Professor Karim. If you can just get clarity on that part, that would be great. Firstly, thank you for the presentation and the opening remarks. And then secondly, I want to know the ratio for the division of vaccines between the private and public sectors currently. How many vaccines have gone to the private sector, how many have gone to the public sector, and the ratio thereof, being cognizant of the fact that the private sector caters for 10% of the population, and how that criteria is gotten above or gotten to in relation to how the distribution is going to happen, and also the division and the ratio in regards to all the three phases, how many vaccines will go to the private sector and how many to the public sector. Thirdly, I want to know what prevented the NDOH from fulfilling their prior target of 1.5 million healthcare workers being vaccinated by the end of April, if I'm not mistaken. I note that you state that the issue is resources. What then will rid the department of the very same reasons in the new target, which is halved or even far beyond halved and extended to May? On top of that, can we just have the reasons for failure to ensure that the prior target of 1.5 million healthcare workers being vaccinated by the end of April, it was not done, and reason why the public was not updated on this particular failure by the NDOH under the leadership of Minister William Khize, and the consequences of this failure, noting that access to quality health care and all of those things is captured and enshrined in our constitution under the Bill of Rights, and that there is no consequence of some sort for the failure of the department of carrying through what they promised or committed to in the beginning of the year. That nothing happens. I mean, yeah, if you can just get an update on that, with what then happens when you continue to fail and not reach your targets. And this is just across the board in the NDOH, not just the vaccine program. And number four, I I'd also like the distribution, the names of the, because I remember there was a communique that distribution and storage tenders would be released, to which we obviously came to complain about, to say that we must strengthen the capacity of the state and the public sector. Can we just get an update on the distribution and storage tenders, if they were done, if you decided to opt to take the recommendation that you must rather increase capacity of the public sector? And number five, I would like an update from the Minister of Health on the SIU investigation against the minister in the alleged corruption that the minister is allegedly involved in. If the company is still carrying out business with the department, a digital advisor, I think, and if the minister, following the announcement, or rather the update by the president of the ANC yesterday, if the minister is going to be stepping down to allow space for the investigation to unfold, and so that we are also aware of what to expect and how to deal with this particular thing, the Portfolio Committee of Health, and the position of South Africa on vaccine nationalism, which is manifesting as vaccine racism. I want to know how the minister and the department plan on really ensuring that this doesn't happen in South Africa, if it hasn't happened already. And to this effect, can we also have demographics inclusive of race, age, and gender of the people that have been vaccinated in South Africa so far? And I also want to know the daily target of vaccination rollout program. At some point, the minister mentioned 200,000 people. I want to know if this is for all the phases or if it's for the last phase, and if there's any relationship between the NDOH and Nigeria on their new vaccine. And lastly, there's an issue I got from, we didn't agree on how many questions we can ask. Chairperson, can I just ask my last question? There's an issue I got from Mposi Lekka, a senior medical scientist in the NICD, who alleges that she was kicked out or dismissed because of racism at the NICD. I've written to the minister about this. Can I just get a commitment from the minister that there will be some sort of intervention in this regard? It's a black woman who alleges that she was removed and dismissed from the NICD because of racism. Thank you very much.
Yeah. It's just the time factor today. We're going to 10 questions per member. We will not make it. Honorable Kwakhube.
Good evening, Chair. Thank you. Mine isn't an exhaustive list. I think there's been a number of questions asked already. I think, Chair, what is indicative here, I mean, from the questions that are being asked by the honorable members, is that, you know, it's indicative of a situation where, you know, there were commitments that were made by the minister and his team around the rollout of the Sisonke trial, and also, you know, targets that were set, which is very important for us as members of parliament to be able to have targets and concrete targets and a concrete plan against which we can hold government account to. Now, following the targets set by the very department, by the minister himself, we have a situation where those targets are not being met, but there isn't also an explanation as to why that is so. We have a situation where the department had told us that there were 1.2 million healthcare workers who needed to be vaccinated. Now, if you go through the documents that were sent to us yesterday, you see that the target for the first trial, or the first phase of the vaccination process, is up just over 600,000 healthcare workers. Now, the question remains, now, if we're starting with the phase two, what's happening with the target of 1.2 million healthcare workers? I think the minister and the department need to be quite transparent. Why has it been a spectacular failure on government to be able to roll out this at least this very trial? Because we have not even been able to vaccinate our healthcare workers even before we look at broader rollout, which will in effect require a lot more resources. It will require a lot more of the health infrastructure, which is in some cases not in place. So I just really need clarity on why has there been a failure. We've been seeing vaccinations range from between 0 to 6,000 people per day, and at some point there was about 11,000 people vaccinated. But there are certain days, like this past Sunday, where there were no vaccinations at all, or the Sunday before that, there were no vaccinations at all, and the reasons was that, you know, there were some administrative issues that.
Honorable Kwakhube. Honorable Kwakhube. Last time, Honorable Kwakhube. Let's move to Honorable.
The host muted her. Chair, the host muted.
I was muted, Chair. I'm here. I'm not entirely sure what's going on.
Okay, continue.
Okay, so I need to then just quickly wrap up. There's just two issues that I would like to understand. In terms of the cold storage from primary healthcare facilities, the minister spoke about how certain vaccines will be allocated to certain parts of the country because of the ease of distribution. Now, I just need to understand what the issue, I mean, what the cold storage capacity is for those various distribution sites, because obviously the higher the requirements, then you've got to be able to kit out your primary healthcare facilities, or you face a situation where we're unable to do broader rollouts. But more importantly, I just need to understand the very slow pace of the rollout. Why has there been a shifting of the goalposts in this regard? And how can we trust then that we're going to be able to roll out 200, 400,000 vaccinations a day if we aren't able to get healthcare workers who are available to us as quickly as possible? Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Wilson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Minister, forgive me if I ask a question that you did answer. My connection is very bad, so I'm struggling a little bit here. Minister, I'll keep mine short. We were apparently offered 5 million doses of the vaccine from China. The information we get now is that that was rejected. Can you please tell me, did we get this offer, and if it was rejected, on what grounds? We have seen the presentation on the rollout plan, the age groups, the comorbidities, etc. We are getting calls from all over the country, from people both young and old, who are unable to get work here, but who have been offered jobs or training positions or educational opportunities in other countries around the world, most of whom who have documentation to support their applications, and yet they are not being considered as frontline, you know, early vaccinations, and without these vaccinations, they now cannot take up these positions or go into these countries. We have a situation in this country where the unemployment is higher, the highest it has ever been. People are desperate for work. That's money that comes back to this country when these opportunities are garnered. And is there any way, please, that we can take this into consideration, that people who have got contracts or who can show valid documentation that they have got a work opportunity outside of the country can be considered as part of an early group for vaccines? We don't want to deny another person in this country another job opportunity. That too many have just lost their jobs already. There's been talk this week about a variant that is quite deadly coming out of Tanzania, the Tanzanian variant, and apparently quite a nasty variant. Are we aware of this, number one? And number two, are we doing anything to mitigate the circumstances of anyone coming in from Tanzania? And are we equipped to deal with this variant? If not, what are we going to do about it? And will current vaccines be able to protect people from that variant? Obviously, a lot of concerns about news articles this week saying the reason why we're not getting some of the vaccines, or why the vaccine deliveries have been held up, is non-signing of documentations by our government. You keep saying things are in the pipeline. The pipeline can be very long. It can go from here to England, or it can go from here to Polokwane. So when we get told that something's in the pipeline, that is disturbing. It all boils down to how long is your pipeline and how long is mine. So this kind of information, when it's vague, is very concerning. And paper articles saying that the reason why we're not getting them, or they're not being delivered on time, is because we have not completed the required documentation is very concerning. And which leads me to your comment about what we will be judged on, Minister. Well, Minister, if I may correct you, you are going to be judged on this vaccine rollout program. you will be judged on how many people will die and how many people will suffer COVID because we have been slow in rolling out our vaccine program. That, sir, is what you are going to be judged on in the long run. And I think that it's not about what you've done, it's what you haven't done that you will be judged on. I thank you.
Honorable Keller.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me first welcome the presentation from the department. But Chairperson, I've got only two questions that I want to ask. The department vaccinated 230,000 plus out of 698 healthcare workers in our country, which is a quarter of the total number of healthcare workers we have. What is our target, and do you think we'll reach the deadline of the 17th May? My second question, Chair, Northern Cape is not doing well with regard to vaccination. What could be the challenges? Is any assistance planned for the Northern Cape to improve their vaccination program? But also, Chairperson, I must welcome also the briefing from the minister, the statement from the minister. We really appreciate you, Minister, for the good work that you are doing and also coming to us as a portfolio members and brief us actually what is happening. And I think as all portfolio members, we must appreciate that, not to criticize, because we are all in this together and we are all want to save the people of South Africa, no matter what. And people, they have a confidence because already the department and the minister, they have started to vaccinate the people of South Africa. So let's not have doubts. Let's not have doubts to our minister. We fully behind you, Minister, and we are fully supporting you. We know that we are going to meet the target that we have put aside to make sure that we vaccinate the people of South Africa at large. And that will be my contribution, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honorable Sukers.
Thank you, Chairperson. I firstly want to start by just thanking the department for the presentation and the commitment to keep us updated and meet with the committee regularly as requested. I want to acknowledge what the minister said in terms of the increased capacity or the multidisciplinary capacity of the MAC leadership. And my question thus is really around the new leadership addressing the issue elements of the program design. And this comes, this refers, Chairperson, to the strong public positioning. And I would suggest that faith-based organizations can assist in terms of keeping people informed and educated around the vaccine rollout. So I would want to know how faith-based organizations are going to be considered or approached to assist with the rollout. Because of the time factor, I'm going to go to two main questions that I have engaged with the minister on before. It appears, Minister, that there's no consideration was given to the ethical concerns of citizens. Although the minister in the very first engagement in January acknowledged and you know that there would be consideration of such. But for us, there is no consideration, it seems, when procuring the vaccine. In the House, I questioned the minister about the use of the HEK293 or PERC6 fetal stem lines in either the design and development, production, or confirmatory lab test phase of the vaccines we have procured. These stem cell lines have been harvested from an aborted fetus, although it is 50 years ago. The minister appeared unaware of this in his answer. I am forwarding the minister the information that I've shared with the committee as well and request that he meet with bioethicists to examine these issues. Now, I have heard the minister say, in terms of the bioinformatics capacity that has now increased in the MAC, these issues, Minister, that I'm highlighting, Chair, it is important for us to address it. If we want all leadership and citizens to have confidence and to come around in terms of the fight against COVID, then we must address the concerns that are present, and we cannot just dismiss it with easy answers. What processes exist for the MAC or the DOH to take note of the bioethical concerns of our citizens? And again, I heard the minister say in terms of the increased capacity. Who are the bioethicists who sit on or advise these bodies, and do they represent the concerns of all sectors of our diverse society? The vaccine rollout has now been delayed, and we have failed to provide our citizens access to vaccination programs. Many of the previous colleagues here have spoken of what the outflow of that is, the impact. And it is concerning that the rollout plan neither identifies contingencies that could delay the rollout, nor identifies alternatives to accelerate this process. This indicates a lack of procurement planning and skill. Again, going back to strategic sourcing, Chair, that we brought up before. The private sector in South Africa are world leaders in the field of strategic sourcing. We are looking at critical sourcing failures. Will the minister look into strategic sourcing best practices urgently to draw on these skills to accelerate the vaccine rollout? And by that also maybe add to the capacity, multidisciplinary capacity that is now within the MAC leadership. Those are my questions, Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Next. Sengwa, Mam Sengwa, you are next.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, let me welcome the presentation and greet to the minister and welcome the comprehensive presentation we have had today. Having said that, I have a few clarity-seeking questions. Number one, what guarantees can you provide the people of South Africa that these vaccines are safe and that they will be free from a negative harmful side effects? Have all the vaccines that are being used in South Africa passed their clinical trials? Number two, at slide 4 of the presentation, you state that Sputnik suppliers have been engaging with SAHPRA for regulatory approval. How long should the regulatory approval take, and what specific steps are involved in this approval? Same slide, you talk about Sinopharm required the government to sign non-disclosure agreement regarding their services. Is this standard practice, considering that transparency is critical, has been done with all the suppliers? Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Imam Sheikh.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and Minister. Thank you very much for your presentation. However, I must say that the department is in a very difficult position, so I'm not surprised when you continuously move the goalposts. Many things in this country, our people are asked to dream, and they continue dreaming for a long period of time, but not realizing those dreams. but I'm hopeful that at least some of the people will be vaccinated in South Africa. Now, first of all, I would like to know the issue of, Minister, where are you getting this funding from for the figures that you have given us in terms of the vaccines that you are securing? The Minister of Finance has said 10 billion rand over 2 years. The figures that you are talking about far exceed that, but the money that you are getting is going to go into a two-year period. So I'm not sure. Could you take us into your confidence and tell us where you're going to get that? And very importantly, we'd like to know what price we are paying for these vaccines that you are going to secure from Johnson & Johnson. I think one of my colleagues did ask the question, why Aspen, J&J, and not BioVac? And I think it's a very, very interesting question, because let us not forget that Johnson & Johnson were found wanting in terms of cancer-causing baby products that they had manufactured. And very importantly, Aspen has been repeatedly caught inflating the price of cancer drugs. So let us not forget about that. And that is the reason why I think we need to know why. But also very importantly, I think one of my colleagues also, and we'd like to know, Minister, if you know, and take us into your confidence once again, if anybody in government has ever received any funding from Aspen Pharmaceuticals or Johnson & Johnson of whatever sort that might influence this decision to go there, particularly when we hear, like from Honorable Wilson and things, that we were offered certain vaccines from other countries like China and things which we've actually rejected or did not take. The other question I've got is that one of the your experts is actually saying that the AstraZeneca vaccine could have been used, should have been used, and cannot understand why we did not use it on those with severe COVID-19 disease in South Africa. So he believes, and I'm talking about Professor Madi, was repeatedly said he cannot understand why, because we could have used this vaccine. If you're talking about the expiry date, well, of course, you see even that we pushed the goalpost. It's now gone. It no more expires. When expired goods get a lifetime now. All right, so that's basically the situation with that. If you can just tell us, why did we not use it for our own purpose? Can you also tell us how much we got for the dose we sell, and what's going to happen to that 39,000 left that I'm told we're still going to be selling within the next day or so, or the 1st of April, and the 1st of April is in 2 days' time. Now, Minister, I'm worried about Aspen, I'm worried about SAPRA. And the reason why I'm worried, because there is someone by the name of McKinsey who has been fined 100 million rand we are supposed to have paid South African government. And he's already paid $70 million to the United States for distributing and promoting drugs that are harmful to hundreds of thousands of people, which is, I'd like to know if there's any link at all with Aspen, whether he's got any recurrent relationship with them that we are securing this. And particularly to remember, the CEO of SAPRA has had a relationship with him, a working relationship for many years, and could not answer whether this 100 million has been paid to date on. I then want to know, Minister, why is the department not pursuing or looking into the issue of ivermectin, despite more and more evidence that's unfolding? Even Professor Helene Rees had admitted when she interrogated her that she received an application many months ago, but she handed it over to Boitumelo, who has done very little nothing, which showed 87% efficacy. So could you tell us that? Could you tell us what is the latest with the third wave that is anticipated? And I know you repeatedly talk to Minister about the dangers of this third wave, but what are we going to do about it? Because whatever is leaked out now indicates that we're not putting in any other stringent measures in place. You're getting 80,000 in every 10 days from Johnson & Johnson, which means you are going to be giving out about 8,000 per day. You are talking about 10,000 that was being rolled out. I don't know, in terms of the mathematics, I seem to have a problem. And then the contract with the compensation, could you perhaps tell us whether how we have finalized this? And again, take us into your confidence. Where do we stand in terms of compensation in the case of serious side effects and things? And when will all our healthcare workers be or hope to be vaccinated, if you can tell us? And lastly, foreign nationals, have we got some provision for foreign nationals living in South Africa so they will also be vaccinated, and what happens if there's a different variant and these vaccines don't work? Thank you very much. I'll stop there.
With due respect, Honorable Sheikh, I will request that Ms. Matshalamba gets a clip of Professor Helen Rees' answer. She was here last week on ivermectin. She exhaustively answered that question. Get that and send it to Honorable Imam Sheikh to read it first before, so that I would really say, Minister, that matter was
dealt with. Point of order, Chairperson.
No, you can then...
Can we proceed, Chair?
You write to Honorable
Sheikh. Point of order, Chairperson.
That question will not be answered during this session. He will write it back to you.
But that's fine. But it's a point of order, Chairperson, because you're misleading the House in terms of what you're saying. Professor recently said she sent it through to Boito Melo. That is what she said, and that's what I'm asking.
And that is within SAPRA. That is SAPRA who's handling that matter. That is SAPRA. Boito Melo is...
She's a subject falling under the National Department and the Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity. My first question is based on the rollout phases that the presenter didn't in actual fact talk to. She didn't talk to that slide. But in that slide, there are clear time frames of February 17 to May 17 and May 17 to July 17, and specifically the May 17 to July 17 that talks to 5 million, to say how is that that number going to be reached, especially with regard to the anticipated third wave. So what I want to ask is, what is the level of the department's readiness towards the anticipated third wave? And a lot of my questions have been asked, but I just would like to go back to the information that I asked during the time when the minister was not here, but the deputy and the HOD was here, and I talked to this problem, but I didn't get any response about this. It was an inquiry on the National Department of Health on the 5th of March 2021. On the notice of termination of contract of HCW, including Cuban doctors whose employment contract would expire tomorrow, which is the 31st of March 2021. And at the same time, that is from Eastern Cape. And at the same time, in Maverick, Daily Maverick, yesterday, there was a report done by the MEC of Health of Eastern Cape, where he admits that they have a severe specialist shortages at hospital with a vacancy rate of 50%. And to ask the department to say, were you able to stop this termination of contract? And I raise specific questions, and I wonder whether I can be able to can get an answer on that. And I also asked on the internships in Gauteng Province Hospital, specifically the OR Tambo, where the internships don't receive any stipend. And I asked because those internships go to the same institutions with other medical doctors who are receiving stipends from provinces like Mpumalanga, Free State, and the rest. So I just feel that it's very much unfair for Gauteng province to be the only one that doesn't honor giving stipends to the internships. So can I today, at least if it's possible, get an answer about these two related questions? Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Dr. Chet, I could skip him today. I'm moving to the last hand. And can he confirm that that is so? Then we move to Honorable Sokacha.
It's fine, Chair. I see there's so many questions asked and so many related questions. So I will sit out. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me also thank the department for the presentation and also the minister for the introductory remarks. Chair, I've only got two questions. One has been asked by the Honorable Geller already. It's around the issue of the concern around the individuals that has been vaccinated in the Northern Cape. It's a real concern. I just wanted to check whether the minister and the department is sharing the same concerns that I'm having around the Northern Cape. And the second one, Chair, is around the vaccination of the Republic of South Africa, Africa's diplomats abroad. I can see the presentation has got emphasis on African countries. I just want to check what is the situation about our diplomats who are abroad. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Yeah. Minister, there seems to be a question that is really coming in through that the plan that you gave us some weeks back, there's a deviation on it in terms of figures and dates as to whether that now is an acknowledgement and we are, how we're going to make up the time lost or what are the challenges. So the challenges have not been indicated on the plan as to the deviation on the plan. But thanks on your opening remarks on the issue that you raised, and we would like to also congratulate to Professor Kolega Mlisana, the new chair. Honorable members might remember, Honorable Kolega Mlisana was part of the delegation that was led by Dr. Chetty on the NHLS. Another reminder, honorable members, we have had, when we noticed that there were some actually gaps on the presentation that were coming in from the Department of Health nationally, we then took it upon ourselves to invite NHLS, to invite SAPRA, and to close their space, and then who else would invite? And then, yeah, and NHLS, SAPRA came in, and the MSRC just last week, Professor Helen Rees, who was going to speak on the principal investigator of J&J. We then have actually had got quite a lot that came from those leaders, because those are issues that we needed to be clarified on. Now, to still want them back on the same issues is another matter. I would then request that we get the notes as to what they said on the questions that you asked, and for the two members who are still asking the same questions, well, those questions are coming quite lengthily and were dealt with specifically. Honorable Minister, I give you the slot to now with your team. I noticed we are at that time, so we may just honor the 7:30 and maybe continue beyond 7 o'clock now, because there's quite a lot of issues to respond to. Minister, thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and the honorable members. I do understand we may have time constraints. I'll try and make the answers brief, although there are too many questions. So I'll deal with them. If there are still issues to be answered, then maybe there'll be time we'll give to the other members of the team. Let me touch on two issues that are being raised, which I think need to be clarified. Firstly, is the speed of the rollout of the vaccine. We said there will be three phases. Phase one will take 3 months. Second phase will take 6 months. The third phase will take 3 months and maybe longer, depending on the flow of the vaccines. Now, we had acknowledged from the start that the rate limiting step is the number of vaccines that we get available for distribution. In this case, we got disrupted with the original plan because of AstraZeneca. We couldn't use it, and so it put us in a situation which was really a kind of a contingency arrangement. And that, therefore, is one reason why we've had, the numbers we wanted to vaccinate were about 1.5 million. We couldn't do so because we no longer have the vaccine, the AstraZeneca, which was here already at that point. And I must say that the decision to not use AstraZeneca was not just taken lightly. In fact, it was Professor Mahdi who came with the results that indicated the challenge. We went and met with the WHO and we explained to them that these were the results that we have. And in the explanation, we indicated that we need to do additional research work. Now, when WHO says that this AstraZeneca can be used in areas where there are vaccines, where there are variants, it's because in other countries, the variants were sensitive to the immunity generated by AstraZeneca. So from that point of view, we understood that South Africa has a slightly different problem because we've got concrete research done by Professor Madi. Now, when people say use AstraZeneca, it's better than not using any vaccines, that can only be applied in a situation where there is no other vaccine available, and therefore you don't have an ethical issue of why do you use something that has been proven on scientific study not to be giving the results that we expect. That was the dilemma that our Ministerial Advisory Committee spoke about. Now, the rate of delivery of these vaccines has obviously been slow because of the fact that they were recalled vaccines. The other delay has come from Pfizer. We have been hoping to get the 600,000 before the end of March. We have not been able to do so, and that's largely because there's been a lot of issues of a contractual nature that kept delaying the process. And even the vaccines we could have bought from COVAX cannot be received by us until this agreement with Pfizer is signed. Now, this kind of delay has got a lot to do with the technicalities of negotiating. You know, you have, for example, a situation where you will sign that we will look at the agreement and send it back, but you have to wait for the global team that is waiting on a queue to process it and bring it back for the next step. That step basically is what that tends to limit things. Nevertheless, we are getting over that problem at this point, and so we expect that there should be no similar challenge in the future. However, we must say that although we would have done more by now, but that we still have not gone past the 3 months which was allocated for the first phase. The first phase was allocated that because we knew that the supply of vaccines is very limited on the first quarter, and that was the reason why we were giving it the 3 months. So we still have the 3 months starting from February, March, and April to the other part of April, if you look at the dates. That is the issue. The second point which I want to touch is that relates to the No Fault Compensation Fund. This fund is a requirement from a number of manufacturers, certainly Johnson & Johnson and Pfizer, but we believe that it's a very important protection mechanism for all South Africans. So we embrace it, and therefore we have started the process of structuring this fund. We're going through the regulations that are necessary to establish it, and all the departments that are involved, Justice, Treasury, and so on, are involved in the discussions. And secondly, the allocations will be made by Treasury in terms of identifying the funds to be used in it. And thirdly, we are still finding amongst the existing entities whether any one of them has got can actually administer this particular fund because of the legislative requirements. So we have actually assured everyone that by the time the vaccines come, there will be a protection for all the people. We think in future this approach should help us to be able to get even medical legal cover for South Africans. So that issue is on course. There hasn't been I wouldn't say the issue has been us not signing the agreement. It has been the negotiation that's dragged quite a bit. Sometimes the negotiation is going on well, then there's a misunderstanding about the conditions of registration. We have to wait to clear that. Once that has been cleared, we come back. There's a misunderstanding of the way we deal with issues. For example, in some cases, there was a requirement for minister to sign the contract, and we took a while to actually show the manufacturing company that if the PFMA expects the director general to sign the contract. So those are some of the issues that are important. We will make the list of these sites to be available, and I'm going to request DG to make sure that it's done fairly quickly. Then the fact that we are not having there's a team in the interministerial committee that's looking at issues of theft and corruption and so on, so it will cover the challenges of any fake vaccines and theft as a matter of risk mitigation. Then the legitimacy of the vaccine, there's a safety arrangement in the batches. So you can actually track a batch right up to a vaccine, right up to the package and to the batch box and right up to the date of delivery. all of that. And there's also an indication if there's been interference, there's a safety feature there. So all of that has been factored in with the JNP. We have no knowledge of who has shares in the Aspen as a company. And certainly I cannot, I'm not aware of any shares by the president or any member of the ANC. Then the issue of the storage, we have said -75 degrees. There are laboratories that have got this facility in the country. When we release the information, I'd like to make sure that PG makes that available again. We did present it some time back, I think twice already in this meeting, but we can remind the members. And so the vaccines will be kept in those particular areas. Then I'll get the DG to just deal with the issue of numbers, but all in all, we still are looking at a minimum of 40 million people in a 12 month period, and we believe that we need to push. There we may have and that we may spill over, but I think what is important is our determination to push and not actually feel complacent to say that it's too long. I don't think it's unrealistic. I think when the vaccines flow, as I've indicated, you will actually see that, that this is a reality. Many countries are going through the challenges that we are going through. All countries do have a challenge with the global supply chain delays and shortages. That's something that will always happen, and we must always be alert to that. And I must also say that the numbers will keep being revised depending on what's happening, but that the overall thrust is that we're trying to reach as many South Africans as possible. So I wouldn't say we're moving the goalposts. I think that it's important for us to always explain the context so that there's no difficulty. AstraZeneca payment was made and we've received the money, and it was equal to what we've paid already. And so there's no problem on that in that regard. And the issues of expiry date is an issue of scientific analysis, quality analysis that gets adjusted by the regulators and the manufacturers talking together. So we've seen that they've been factoring those issues in. Then the question of queue jumping. Now and again, we've had members here requesting for certain people to be given access to vaccine. So this is something that we'll just have to be alive to, so that we try and vaccinate as many people without any particular challenges. Professor Karim is going to be replaced by Professor Mlisana, who has been in this area before. And the vaccine in the current program, we've allocated about a third of vaccines to the private sector. That is because some of the people who are going to be vaccinated as you go into the future might be public servants who are actually under medical aid, and therefore we'll understand that some health workers are already counted also on the private sector, even though they work in the public sector. We have, we're going to have to, I've said in my opening address that the Director General and the private sector will determine these numbers between public and private sector. So the explanation, we've given this in the public as to the delays. I've just indicated why there's been a delay. The first issue is that there was a 1.5 million vaccines that were ready to be used, but we couldn't use them. And secondly, we have indicated that the recall of the vaccines has slowed down the pace of delivery, and the delays in the conclusion of the agreement with Pfizer made it difficult to receive even from the COVAX platform. Then the issue of the storage tenders, yes, these tenders were actually released, but I must say as well that the government has also been of the view that you must increase the capacity of the state, and so where we've got state capacity, there will not be a need for us to use the private sector. But at the same time, we must also understand that the schedule might show us, the delivery schedule might show us that we may not need so much of space. We'll wait and see, but we might be dealing with the Kanban system where we get something just before it is used. The SIU investigation is continuing. We have offered our cooperation, and staff members, the officials and management that need to be interviewed have made themselves available. The SIU has requested documentation. These have been made available. So there's full cooperation with this particular investigation. So as you have heard from the president, we'll wait for the investigation to come and be, once it's concluded, then of course we'll have to engage the outcome. Vaccine nationalism is a challenge indeed throughout the world, and we have to keep fighting this. And I think it's important for us to understand that this is something that is not fair for everyone in the world, but we have to continue to ensure that we get our fair share as South Africans. The daily vaccination rates up to now, I think we can give you that report of what has happened up to now, and in the future we'll keep the regular reports on that. The issue of Dr. Mposelega, I'm not aware, but if it's possible to give us the, if you say you have sent the documentation, we'll follow it up. We have explained the issue around the commitment that has been made, and if there's a previous explanation must have been missed, was in public, we have just indicated what the situation is in relation to how the delays in the flow of vaccine will always be a factor, but we believe that this was a temporary issue. We'll have better flow once the vaccines start coming in April. And we believe that it should be on the latter part of April, by which they've said, the companies have said they're waiting as much as possible for anything early, but they would give us towards the second or third week of April, by which we should be certain that vaccines would have come to us. And the cold storage requirements in the peripheral, in the rural areas and peripheral centers, we'll be using the hospitals as centers and some of the facilities which have got adequate storage mechanism, which are not difficult because 2 to 8 degrees is available in most of the hospital fridges. There is an offer of vaccines from China. It has not been rejected. Firstly, initially we thought it was a donation. Later on, our members told us that it needed to be negotiated, and we said the negotiation will continue, but it's obviously going to be subject to the registration. Once it's clearly registered, we know whether it's Sinovac or Sinopharm that we're going to negotiate with. So that is ongoing. The calls of people who are going abroad, we at this point are not able to accommodate those. They may obviously come in at the time when we've got the rollout, when their turn comes, and we would want to encourage them to participate at that level. We are aware of the new variant that was identified in Tanzania. Professor Tulio de Rovira did brief us that there is such a variant. It was actually discovered in Angola. And so they continue to work with Africa's Center for Disease Control to bring that issue to further knowledge that should be shared amongst all of us. They are obviously going to be looking at how it responds to the various vaccines, and therefore they'll be advising us as we move on. The delays in the agreement, it's not just government. There's quite a lot of nebulous terms that have delayed this, and as I've indicated, in some instances it's got nothing to do with the agreement, it's got to do with the registration issues. In some, it's a misunderstanding of how our PFMA works. And it takes a while because you're dealing with a global team that puts you in a queue. Once that issue needs to be clarified, you have to wait for so many days before you can come back to negotiate with them. So that's really what is involved. And I think it's important for us to indicate that it's been one of the very exhausting processes, but we're getting over that at this point. The vaccination of health workers, indeed, these health workers are being vaccinated. We really hope that we'll be able to close the health worker chapter by end of April, and therefore move on to get to the next phase without anyone left behind. We can actually overlap the two when we find that there are enough vaccines coming at that point, because we expect that it will be both Pfizer and J&J almost at the same time. So we do appreciate all the comments. We will look at the issue of Northern Cape and see how to assist them. And I think the point made by Honorable Keller that we're all in this together, it's important that all of us must know we have to lead our people in the direction. So we must share as much information as possible, with all of us being part of the leadership that must guide our people. Honorable speakers, the issues that have been raised, I think your point about faith-based organization, there's actually a program that they're working on to take the campaign forward, to help us reach to various communities, to share our perspective on the vaccines and help to make sure that vaccine reception is good. The issues around ethical concerns, you raised it last time. I want to suggest that if you could give me this information that you have raised, because as I said, I wasn't aware of it to that extent, and I'm not sure what to make of it when you raise it. But if you give it to us, we'll actually get our experts to go through it, and then we can engage. Even if it means you have to meet with them yourself, I would support that as well. Then I don't believe that there's a failure of strategic procurement which will require us to use the private sector. The private sector would not be able to easily get the vaccines with the kind of assurances of safety and that we have. But we will actually make the vaccines available to all the private sector in South Africa, and we've got that agreed, and therefore there shouldn't be any concern on that side. The procurement processes have indicated at this point we can be assured of the first 31, which have indicated 31 million vaccines and another 20 million vaccines. That should take us a long way towards reaching the numbers that we have targeted, even though we're still negotiating for some additional amounts. So there is no problem on procurement in this regard. Honorable Sengwa, yes, indeed, we can guarantee that the vaccines have gone through the necessary trial to ensure that safety and efficacy has been guaranteed. And where we are, we're at a point where we are actually administering in a wide scale as the different parts of the world are doing. The issue of Sputnik, I've put it earlier in my comments, they are awaiting the registration with SAHPRA. I indicated that the SAHPRA has gone to inspect their GMP sites, and therefore it's important that they continue on what is called rolling submissions. That means that they will continue to be reviewed each time they've got new information. This is the same thing with the Sinopharm.
Minister seems to be disappearing now. I'm not sure only on me or on all of us.
On all of us,
all of us, Chairperson.
Okay. Dr. Manzi, can you assist? Okay. DG, the minister said there may be some questions that you would ask, you'll answer. Maybe while we are tracing him, can you take those?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I think the Minister has covered quite a bit. I will move on to talk about the numbers. In terms of the numbers, one of the difficult things, again, as the Minister mentioned, is the supply. So we have actually moved some of the health workers because we will only cover 500,000 from the Sisonke, and then the others will depend on the first batch that will come from J&J. The numbers that we initially worked on was 1.2. We know in the public sector in itself, on PESAL, we only have 380,000 workers that are on PESAL. But we went to the private sector to give us some of the numbers, and they gave us quite huge numbers. When we started to get the registrations going and we wanted them to give us the names, the numbers started decreasing. So currently we registered just less than 800,000, and we're still moving for those who can't register because you've got those that are in the public sector, in the private sector. In the public sector is those that are on PESAL, and those that work in hospitals but are not on PESAL. Those are your workers like your security who are outsourced, the cleaners who are outsourced, and some of the guardian people who are outsourced who still have exposure to the patients. So we're working on those numbers. They've not really been cut off. but it was based on the initial work that we were doing, and we will cover all of them at the end of the day as we get the numbers moving. But also in terms of the private practices, the GP practices, we just depend on the GP or someone who runs a private practice to say, I've got so many people employed. Very difficult to confirm, and it becomes quite a number of issues. I can see the minister is back. Not sure if I can allow the minister to continue, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. My apologies. I did get a power disruption, but I'm fine now. Just to take off, and I'm glad that the DG has spoken about the issue of numbers. The question raised by the honorable member regarding where the funding will come from, certainly most of our funds will come from Treasury. We still have an option of getting support from the private sector. Important question about why Bioware, why not Bioware, why Aspen? Well, Aspen was an agreement between J&J and Aspen, but we had actually engaged Pfizer earlier. They wanted to work with Bioware, and Bioware at that point felt that they needed quite a huge amount of investment to be able to match the requirement for the technology transfer that was necessary at the time. We are now working with BioVac, who have actually looked at what can be done. So we believe that not only BioVac, but we need to look at a few other parts of the country where different manufacturers that can have the capability enhanced so that they can participate. A lot of work is being done at that level. I'm sure when there's more progress, we'll be able to be updated. I have no knowledge about anyone who was funded by Aspen, and therefore I will not be able to answer the question. I'm sure if we ask Aspen, they might be able to explain that. Your concern about the issues, reputational issues with Johnson & Johnson involving other drugs, we have noted that in the past. We don't believe that it affects what we're doing now at this point, but we'll keep vigilant in case there's anything that needs to be acted upon. We have not rejected any offers from China, and if I may well say that China had offered the vaccines, but when you say offer, we don't know whether it's offer to sell or offer to donate. So the team went to go and talk to China at that point, and they came back to say that there's a price that they needed to be negotiated, but because there's still a lot of work being done, we're not been able to take that matter forward. But beyond that, there's also been offers given to the defense, and we've discussed that both the defense and the Department of Health will approach China together and so that we are able to deal with that issue and resolve it. But there is no problem around that matter. I did indicate as well that, Professor Madi was the one who came with the information that indicated that AstraZeneca is not as effective as would have been expected. We've actually had the Ministerial Advisory Committee ranking up the numbers of vaccines and indicating that Johnson & Johnson is still one that's got the optimal results to work toward. And then, of course, Pfizer, Moderna, and Sputnik, they've actually given those. There are other issues involved there, but I must say that we have no regrets of not having used AstraZeneca. At this point, we believe that there could have probably been different questions that we've done there. Now, we've seen this before. On the one side, when we brought the AstraZeneca, there was quite a lot of issues about the expiry date. But as soon as we started preparing to sell them, there's another question, why don't you use them? So I think we use our best judgment in this case, and we believe that we're quite right with the AstraZeneca. The other issue that relates to distribution of improper drugs and the names that Honorable Member Imam Sheikh raised, we need more information to deal with that issue. The issue around ivermectin, we've discussed before. At the end of the day, we still don't have a conclusive report that is available to say that it can be used in South Africa. So work is still ongoing in that regard. The third wave remains a possibility. We don't have an exact date. There's no model that's showing us that, but we think it's important for us to always be aware that we can easily precipitate a resurgence if we're not adhering to the containment measures of using distances, masks, and so on. Then I have already explained the no-fault compensation fund, that is work in progress, and all the people who will have been affected by any adverse effects after following the immunization will be eligible to use that particular program. But those who would have used the Johnson & Johnson at this point will actually be covered in a slightly different fund, which is linked to the research process, the trial processes. Then we've again explained that the phases from at the beginning, we had said first phase is 3 months, and since we started in the first, in the 17th of February, it takes us to 17th of March, 17th of April, and 17th of May. That's really what it should be, technically speaking. But nevertheless, we hope to have started the second phase even before that time frame is finished. And we will be continuing to, you know, conscientize our communities on containment measures so that we avoid that wave. The issue around the Cuban doctors and in the Eastern Cape, the DG might want to comment about that. And so I'm not also aware about interns in Gauteng province which have got no stipend. It's possible though, if someone is not covered by South African government and they might be having some other government out other than South Africa looking after them, that may be possible. So we'll need more information about that. I wouldn't know what's happening. Then delays in the Northern Cape, that matter has been raised. We'll give it attention. And then Honorable Chairperson, you have pointed out that you have received more information from SAPRA, from Medical Research Council, and NICD. We appreciate that, and we continue to offer ourselves to give as much information as possible to all, to the portfolio committee whenever needed. So from that point of view, I'd like to say if there's still any more time, maybe the DG and maybe DM might want to add if there's anything that was left out. Thank you very much.
The Deputy Minister or DG on the Cuban program and the Gauteng payments.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you to the Minister for really standing in for us and answering all the questions. I've just sent the press release to the Honourable Member from the Eastern Cape. All contracts were renewed. It was released yesterday for community health workers, for the contracted nurses. They've extended the contracts. And for the Cuban doctors, I personally signed the letters to all the provinces on the Cuban program after our negotiation with the Cuban ambassador. So that matter is closed. And the Honorable Member has actually acknowledged the receipt of that information. It's the Gauteng one that we just need to check, but it cannot be medical interns because medical interns are appointed against the positions. And they get appointed. So it's probably maybe some people who are doing in-service training that we just need to follow up. And I have sent the message to the head of Department of Gauteng to come back with information, and we will send directly to the member. I think the minister otherwise covered everything. Oh, the last one was that when do we plan to start registration for phase 2 and 3? The team that is working on the system has said the system should be ready by the 15th of April to start taking registrations beyond the healthcare workers. That's all that I'd like to add, Honorable Chair. Thank you very much.
I was speaking with my mute. I was saying, honorable members, if there's any one of us who has checked that one of or his or her question was not answered satisfactorily, we can forward those to the secretary or myself, then we can get them to the department to follow up. We would like to, at this moment, thank the minister for always trying his best to come in with his delegation on to brief us on the progress on this COVID-19 pandemic fortnightly. Minister, while you are on recess, yes, but this committee also felt that it would be important to get these meetings respected and honored. So on our side, in fortnight again, we will meet with you for another update, fresh information. We thank you and your delegation that has come in here. To you, honorable members, thank you very much for your participation. And we have to leave this at this level now. Thank you very much. The meeting is then adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. Malibongwe.
Thank you, Chair.